the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
All right, well, let's move on a little bit here to ufology and the internet, because you're a prolific blogger. Your blog is amazing. Like I said earlier, it's full of stuff. What do you think of the UFO scene on the internet? Because, like you've already referenced numerous times, UFO updates, that seems to be the big stomping ground of ufologists as far as where they hang out on the internet now.
Yeah.
What do you think of that as a social scene, and as far as forwarding the serious study of UFOs, as you call it?
It's like anything else with ufology, wheat and chaff. So much chaff, very little wheat.
Yeah.
But there is wheat there. The current sort of brouhaha over Jesse Marcel Jr., which by the time you air this might seem sort of what?
Yeah.
But if you go back to UFO updates for August of 2006 and just check that month's archives, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff is useless. Doesn't really, I don't think, move anything forward. It's just a bunch of people talking to hear themselves talk. Honestly, that's what I believe.
Yeah.
But there have been threads on UFO updates. If you're willing to search over the years, you can glean important information, or important discussions at least. So UFO updates is a valuable resource. I think UFO updates is compromised by the fact that some of those people I call as the attack dogs of ufology are also members. And again, if you come up and say something that they don't agree with, they'll smear you on UFO updates. And the moderator, Errol Bruce Knapp, who's a very nice guy, does have a couple of guys that I think he should, hold the whip hand a little tighter with and sort of delete some of their posts. But he doesn't, because they're friends. And then it's fine, his list, he can do whatever he wants. But my criticisms aside, UFO updates, which you can get to by going to www.virtuallystrange.net and then follow the links to updates.
Mm-hmm.
Useful resource for your listeners if they haven't gone there.
Yeah.
There are other ones. The Project Blue Book Archive is definitely one of those resources. And if you want to do real firsthand research into the UFO phenomenon, good place to go. If you just want to have some fun and just, sort of see, if you're a person who likes history, the kind of person who likes walking into old churches, not because you're religious, but you just want to feel the history.
Yeah.
Go to the Blue Book Archive and just look at some of the old documents, because that's real history. There are resources like that out there. There are some good blogs. Stuart Miller, a friend of mine in the United Kingdom, with UFO Review.
Yep.
It's a good resource. Some of the information he puts up there is goofy. Some of it's not. It's up to people to decide for themselves which is which. The Anomalist is another one. More, it's not just UFOs, either of them. They're sort of paranormal in general.
Yep.
But, those are two good places to go. Daily Grail is another, to find sort of the headlines of the day of what's going on out there. So from a news point of view, those are good places to go. Stuart also has an online magazine, UFO Review, which is a good read. He publishes it every second month and usually about 100 pages. So there are places out there where you can find information. And as with the Project Blue Book Archive, places where you can actually see real documents, do real research, never have to leave the sanctity of your home. The FBI website, the CIA website, some government resources. Canada, the National Archives in Canada, has a website, not devoted to UFOs, but within the National Archives pages, lists all the resources, like here's all where the UFO material is at the National Archives, and then offers, if you ever want to go to the archives in Ottawa and research, you don't have to look very far, it'll tell you where you need to look.
Oh, that's cool.
Great. Great resource. But it also provides synopses of Canadian UFO history and stuff. That's another good researching resource. Now, having said that,
oh, here we go.
Most of the stuff on the UFO, like most UFO films, like most everything, is crap. And it really sort of, people get drawn off into different sort of areas. A lot of it's just non-discriminatory. You'll see, for instance, a person who will put up every single headline, every single blog article, everything that's written about UFOs. They'll have this blog, they'll just put it all up there. And, great, fine. To me, that's lazy. Take the time to actually look at them and say, well, you know what? And people will look at me and say, oh, you want to censor information? Yes. I want to censor the bad stuff. Not in the sense that government censors, evil censorship, but just like, it's my website. I am going to decide not to put that up there because I think it's goofy.
Yeah.
So if you are responsible for whatever you put up on your website. If you link to something, you cannot duck responsibility for whatever it says by simply saying, well, I'm just putting everything out there and you people can decide for yourself. You know, that's true. People can decide for themselves, but I think you will become associated with that material and you can issue all the disclaimers you want, but I don't think that does any good. It's one of the big problems I have with Jeff Rentz.
Mm-hmm.
He issues his disclaimers, and then he puts neo-Nazis, anti-Semites, Holocaust deniers galore on his website and on his radio show. So Stan Friedman might be on one night, followed by Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review the next night, saying the Holocaust is all a bunch of bunk. And I think, you know, Rentz then says, well, I'm just putting information out there. Well, no. You know, you are responsible sometimes for the information you put out there. So, and there are people who disagree with me about that, and that's fine too.
Yeah.
But I have a different view on it. So, but a lot of stuff you're going to read on the internet about UFOs is crap. I mean, it's just not worth the time of day to read, some of which you'll find at my blog. there are columns that I'm going to write that you're probably going to go, eh, crap. And you're probably right. Some of them are. The trick is, as with anything else, with any research into any subject, on the face of the earth, whether it's esoteric, paranormal, historical, whatever, political, is to really, you know, keep a critical mind and be able to quickly say, nope, 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 yes. That's one of the ones I want to read. That's good. And my advice on how to do that would be to say, if a person who's offering an opinion offers sources for that opinion, that's a good start.
Yeah.
Then check the sources. Are they working from primary documents or primary sources? That's the best. At least then you know that they've looked at the actual material. Or are they just referencing somebody else's opinion? Well, that's okay if the somebody else's opinion has referenced primary sources. I mean, it's like cloning. Every time you move further away from primary resources, your clone becomes weaker.
Yeah.
And I think that's often what happens on UFO websites and UFO opinion sites and everything. They move consistently away from the primary sources to the point where they stop referencing them altogether at some point. And I, you know, those are the kind of resources. Yeah, you can read them if you want, but they're not very useful. But there is good stuff there on the internet. It, you know, you just have to take your time to sort it out. One of the good things is internet radio. Coast to Coast is a good example, but so has been all of America.
Yes.
I listen to most of your podcasts from season one. Obviously, if you've listened to this one, you'll know I don't agree with a lot of those people.
Yep,
Alfred
yep.
Weber, Stephen Bassett, Richard Dolan. You'll know that there are other people that you interviewed that I do agree with, at least on a number of things, like Stan Friedman and James Gutman. But
yeah.
That had nothing to do with UFOs. I just happen to be a pro wrestling junkie like Gutman is. But that's fine. You know, if you don't want to listen to an interview with Alfred Weber, just don't tune in.
Yeah.
I tuned in because I wanted to see what the guy had to say. I didn't buy any of it. But, you know, you need to be discriminating about that stuff. But I have no problem with people putting things out there like you do. You know, as long as they're not like Rentz does, anti-Semitic Holocaust deniers. But to my knowledge, you've never had any of those on the
North
America.
No, we don't have anybody like that.
You know, you do have to be careful about that stuff. But within the realm of reasonable opinion that people can disagree on, sure, the more the merrier, and then let people decide.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the internet, somewhere in there, and I'm sure my critics will listen to this and go, Kimball just contradicted himself. Don't do this, but then do this. The end result of it is, you put it all out there, let the people decide, as long as it's not inflammatory material or the kind of stuff Rentz spews. It's really a Rentz thing for me. But the internet is changing the way information is being delivered to people. There's absolutely no doubt about that. It's going to change my industry within 10 years.
Yeah.
It already is. But it's going to change the way the film and television industry works massively, the way information is delivered to people. So when I wrote my little thing about you, and I said, look, you know, Binal's on the cutting edge, and he's part of that group of people that are changing the way UFO information is delivered to people, it is. Because podcasting, and other people besides you are doing it. Imagine my surprise when I learned that, but I thought it was just you.
Let's not talk about those other people.
Yeah, no, you're competitors. You're the best, of course. Podcasting, things like forums, which you have on your website, but there are UFO Planets, another one I belong to, the Coast to Coast forum that the Streamlinkers are in, I'm in that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you getting real research out of those things? Probably not. Are you getting people sharing opinions, a conversation going on? Yes. Is that useful? Yes. Is it going to solve the UFO question? No, but it's useful for other purposes.
Yeah.
You know, a guy like me might want to go on and try and convince people of something, or I might say, look, study the RB-47 case. Other people will argue about the extra-dimensional theory. Great. All of that has a certain use. It needs to be divorced, or at least differentiated, from serious UFO research. But again, they are the readers. At the end of the day, they matter, too. Because if you're a historian writing books and nobody's reading them, well, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a scientist, science writer like Sagan writing books and nobody's reading them, what's the point? Well, yes, the sake of doing it, I suppose, is the point. But at the end of the day, it's also about getting that information out to people. Internet's changing it all. And for good and ill, the challenge for people is to make sure it's good, not ill.
Yeah.
And... yeah, you know, I think you are, Tim. I think you're sort of on the cutting edge of that.
Oh, stop.
You were one of the first guys to create a website. It's relatively easy to do. I know you might disagree, but it's not easy to do well, but it's relatively easy to get a website up there and to do podcasts and things like that. It's not as easy to pick the right people to talk to conduct a decent interview, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes an awful lot of time and effort, as I'm sure you could tell anyone who's going to take something like that on.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Friedman-esque in a way. A lot of time and effort, maybe not a lot of reward. But the reward comes from doing it. And like I said, my own industry, you know, I'm repeating myself again, but you are on the cutting edge in the sense that soon we'll be delivering our content. We already are to some degree via the internet.
Yeah.
I went to a reunion of my old friends from high school, 20-year reunion, of a group of six of us, and all they could talk about, everyone, and these aren't techies, these aren't guys, YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, everything, have you seen this on YouTube? I went, YouTube? I never look at YouTube. What the heck are you talking about? I mean, I knew what it was, but... And that to me was an eye opener. Here are guys that are not computer scientists. They're insured, and one's an accountant, one sells furniture, although he has a master's degree in astrophysics. Go figure. Another one's a lawyer slash legal editor, but they all know YouTube and they all get information from YouTube and watch things on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And I think that you're seeing UFO videos wind up on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
most of which just immediately you can write off as being fake. But maybe one or two or three of them will pop up that are worthy of, you know, some serious study.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you're Joe Blow out in the middle of Timbuktu and you get some video of a UFO, you don't have to call NBC or CBC or CBS or whatever.
Yeah.
You can stick it on the internet yourself. And eventually the meme will travel, the information will travel, and people will see it. So, yeah, the mainstream media is taking a hit and the internet's taking over. At some point, the internet will become like the mainstream media. Never underestimate the ability, as you've seen with the music industry, for people to put the smackdown on do-it-yourself guys and sort of corporatize the entire thing. So out goes Napster, in comes people buying songs off the internet for 99 cents a song or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. You know, eventually, everything needs a structure. And that's eventually where the internet's going to go, too. But I just think it's such a radical altering in how information is delivered and how accessible it is that it might be truly a paradigm shift in terms of information delivery. And you're right there. You're one of the guys who are in your own small way making that happen within your own small field, which is ufology or paranormal, to be more precise, esoterica. So good for you.
Well, thanks.
Although you might want to edit some of that out because that was rather long-winded. Although if you divide this up into a two-episode show...
This is going to be a two-episode show. Don't you worry about that.
There you go.
One guy I wanted you to talk about because you quote him and reference him a lot on your blog, and he's sort of he's pretty well-known to the UFO hardcores, but he's not as well-known to, I guess, the internet UFO folks in a sense because he's sort of a Luddite. That would be Jim Moseley.
Well, Moseley's been doing it longer than Stan has, which is probably all you need to know.
Yeah.
He's been doing it differently than what Stan's been doing, although they were two of the big names on the speaker circuit back when the college speaking circuit was really going in the late 60s and early 70s. But Moseley admits in his book, he said Stan was better at it than I was, so he got more booking. But I've never met Jim Moseley. I've talked to him on the phone. We've corresponded at some length. over the last 2 years. I've read his saucer smear online for years. Now I'm a non-subscriber. He sort of made me a non-subscriber, which is quite an honor. He's a skeptic. There's no question about it, but so am I. So are most people, I think, in ufology. But in his most recent issue of Saucer Smear, he made a point of saying, I'm not a skeptic, I'm not a debunker. He meant skeptic in a different way than I do.
Yeah.
In the way that some people use skeptic to mean debunker.
Yes, yeah, a slur almost.
He is skeptical, certainly, about the extraterrestrial hypothesis. I think Mosley is more of an extra-dimensional guy, from what I can figure from his writings. But he's gone on from being a guy who did research into the UFO phenomenon. And he, in the early 50s, did a lot of first-hand research, which a lot of people don't know, into UFOs. He, on the Aztec case, for instance, interviewed directly Frank Scully, personally, the guy who wrote the book, Behind the Flying Saucers. I believe he interviewed Silas Newton, who was the con man who put it all together. I'm trying to remember his book, shockingly close to the truth. I'm pretty sure he interviewed Newton. He talked to George Adamski, a lot of the contactees. So Mosley did a lot of first-hand research back in the 1950s, sort of got out of that in the 1960s, and then ever since he's become the court jester of ufology.
Yeah.
And I think that's because he said, look, you know, we're probably never going to solve the UFO mystery, whatever it is. And what interests me even more are the people who are involved in ufology, in UFOs. So guys like Stan Friedman, that's what interests me almost more than whether aliens are coming here or not, because I can actually study Stan Friedman. You know, I can't actually talk to an alien.
Yeah.
So Mosley has become notorious or famous within ufology, depending on who you talk to. He is an acquired taste. Some people hate him. Really, you know, hate him. Other people, you know, read him, probably would never admit it, and claim to hate him. And then there's a fairly large group of us, I think, who have quite a good deal of respect for Mosley and his work, and the fact that he has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Because one thing ufology is sometimes, Kevin Randall has pointed this out to me over and over again, you should see the outtakes of my interviews with Randall. Someday I'm going to put a bonus materials on a DVD of a film that Randall's appeared in, one of mine, so either Stan Friedman or the New Fields of Fear film, and it'll be an hour of Kevin Randall outtakes, where he complains about ufology not having a sense of humor, and then he demonstrates why he does. And he's a very funny man, and he likes to make fun, not only of other ufologists, but himself. And I think that's one of the great reasons why I respect Randall so much and like him so much. Any chance I get to talk to the man is a pleasure, because he gets it. He has a sense of wonder about UFOs. He also has a sense of humor about ufology. And he understands that the two can somehow be different, that you can laugh at yourself. It's important to laugh at yourself. Poke holes in the egos. Prick the balloon, if you will.
Yes.
Mosley, even more so. Sometimes Mosley can do it in a slightly more spiteful way, or it seems spiteful, but I don't think so. I think Mosley really has a pretty decent heart and a pretty good sense of humor. And the people that he's ticked off over the years are people that have a pretty sizable ego and don't like it when people make fun of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can read Saucer Smear and find out who those people are.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name them, but it should be fairly obvious. Although I will say this, one guy that Mosley has had an ongoing sort of hate relationship with for decades is Dick Hall, author of the UFO Evidence Volumes 1 and 2. I like both of them equally. I have a great deal of respect for Dick Hall. I've met him. I've interviewed him, corresponded with him. I think he's a wonderful man. I think he's done very good work. I think, you know, society as a whole hasn't rewarded Dick. He's fallen on hard times. I think it was because of the Enron thing, you know.
Yeah.
Not the way you'd want to end your life or career.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dick Hall, to me, one of the 10 great ufologists of all time. And I did a little list of my 10 greatest ufologists. Jim Mosley was right next to Dick Hall on that list. Neither one of them would probably agree with me putting the other one on because they just don't get along. But I would exempt Dick Hall from my list of people with big egos that don't like Jim Mosley, just because I think with them it's more of a personal thing.
Yeah.
If you read their books, some of the things they went through in their early years together, because they've both been around for so long. Everybody else, though, that hates Mosley, I think it's all ego.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just have totally lacking in the sense of humor and really a sense of wonder, too. So many people within ufology, yes, it should be taken seriously, Absolutely. I'm an advocate of that. But if you talk to people, astronauts or scientists with SETI or scientists who work with NASA, who work with, you know, that kind of stuff where we're going out there or we're listening to people maybe who are coming, you know, signals coming here, they always sound like they have a sense of wonder about it. Like, it's fun. They enjoy it. That's Shostak. You put him on the radio, whether you like him or not, what he's saying, the guy sounds like he's genuinely having fun with his life. He enjoys his work. With a lot of people in ufology, because it becomes so personal and there's so many egos involved, it sounds like they're being tortured by the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah.
Like, these are unhappy people.
Yeah.
And so I rub some of them the wrong way because I'm not an unhappy person. I have a sense of humor. Stan is not an unhappy person. He has a sense of humor. Yeah, I'd like to put some of Stan's jokes, you know, although his are more of the sort of 50s Catskills kind of thing. The humor that doesn't translate to the Eddie Murphy generation or whatever, whoever's hot these days. But, you know, he has a sense of humor, too. And so, about himself as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kind of people I like, I get along with, I respect. Because they see, again, the big picture, and part of that big picture is a sense of humor. Mosley's one of them, too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, ufology has so many people who just are humorless, truly and utterly humorless. And, you know, I feel sorry for them. I really do. Because, and they're going to go, oh, we don't need Kimmel to feel sorry for us. How dare he? That's insulting. Well, you know, I mean, in a good way, guys, I feel sorry for you because life's fun. And it just doesn't sound, UFOs should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Serious, but fun.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't sound like you're having any fun. And that's a shame, frankly. So there you go.
All right. This is the last sort of overarching big picture question. Talking about your blog post that talked about me. Let's not talk about me this time, though.
Sure, sure.
But as far as the future of ufology goes and how, what was the age cutoff on that?
Anyone under 50.
Yeah, let's see, there's the root of what the question really is all about. Under 50 to be the future of ufology, that's kind of scary. Why do you think there is this total lack of young people getting into the field of ufology nowadays?
I'll go with a couple of different tacks there. One is, I will point out in my top 10 list, besides, I think MJ-12's coming for me.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wait, no, MJ-12 doesn't use sirens. Good. I'm all right then. You know, I'll point out you, but also Mac Tonies, who's only 30.
Mm-hmm.
Will Wise, who's on my list, he's only 36. Nick Redfern just turned 40. I mean, that's still young.
Yeah.
So there were people on that list who, Nick Pope, much to my surprise, I always thought he was older. I think Nick Pope is only 41 or 42. And he was at the top of my list.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, you know, good youngish people.
Yeah.
You and Mac are certainly, definitely within the realm of young. Anyone under 30 or at 30 is still young.
Nice.
So there are people like that. But there aren't very many.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. And I actually had this sort of strain to think of a few people. Oh, John Greenwald is another guy I should mention too. Mm-hmm. He's still in his 20s. Why? Ask yourself a question, Tim. If you're a young, I don't know, let me think here. Physics student. Say you're in your third year of an undergrad program in physics. And there's so many things you can do with your life and pay attention to and get involved in. Is UFO or ufology really going to be one of the first things you think about? I don't think so. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think we've already covered some of them. Because if you come in and you are skeptical and you're one of those A, B, C, D, E or the provable things kind of guys, then you're going to get it. You're going to get it from the attack dogs, and if that's not enough to turn you off, and it would be for most people, but say you get thick skin, you don't care, onward and upward. Well, then guess who else you're going to get it from? You're going to get it from the egos,
yeah.
Any of whom you can see at UFO Updates. There are people, one or two of whom contribute to your website, who have stated publicly they won't post at UFO Updates because they're intimidated. Words to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and they're young people, by the way. Leslie is one of them.
Yeah.
I think that's, A, ridiculous. I think Leslie should feel free to post if she wants. But, B, I think that's, I don't blame her. Because if you put something out there, there's a reasonably good chance that even if, say it's stupid, say it's a silly question, you should have known the answer to that maybe if you'd done a bit more research. Well, life's short. Can't research everything.
Yeah.
Instead of somebody saying, interesting question, a lot of this has been covered before, person X, here's five places you can look, take a look, and then come back and let me know what you think. Instead of saying that, what they'll say is, well, you obviously don't know what you're talking about. We've been studying UFOs for 30 years, 40 years. This was discussed 20 years ago. Like, oh, you knew people coming in, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, good grief. It's like dinosaurs. And that is not the way to encourage young people to come and take an interest in the field, to turn around and, I paraphrase, basically say, you don't know what you're talking about, don't offer an opinion until you've spent 10 or 20 years like we have in the trenches.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, screw you, is what most young people would say when faced with that.
Yeah.
I remember what it was like to be young. I'm not that old now. Like, if somebody had told me that, I would have said, well, okay, blow.
Yep.
Like, I want nothing to do with you. I want nothing to do with your stupid little website or whatever. And believe me, not everybody UFO updates. I'm not picking on updates. It's
yeah.
But a lot of the so-called mavens of ufology can come across that way. And some of them, sometimes it's just the way they are, but they don't really mean it. And other ones, they do mean it. Like, go away.
Yeah.
And it almost becomes, here you have a field of study. Let's assume that everything I've said about ufology is wrong. It's legitimate, it's a field of study, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's basically an old boys network.
Mm-hmm.
It is cutting-edge material, UFOs. Say you believe in the ETH, or that's the way you want to go. So, alien spacecraft coming here. Nothing more cutting-edge than that.
Yeah.
And yet, the way they go about dealing with people makes it sound like a bunch, sometimes, of late 19th century Victorian imperialists sitting in a drawing room somewhere in London going, yes, women, oh, can't allow them in here. Colonials, can't allow them in here. Ooh, the colored types, mustn't allow them in here. Now remember, for anyone who says Paul just said colored types, I'm working in the voice of a late 19th century colonial.
Yes.
But that's the attitude, you know, only us. We white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males in the old days, but now it's, you know, usually we white Anglo-Saxon Protestant / Catholic, whatever, religion doesn't really matter,
yeah.
Men, because the vast majority, you'll note there's no women on my list. If you put a list of top ufologists, period, together, say the top 100, the vast majority would be men.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be sort of a very much an old boys clique / attitude amongst many of them. And it turns, I think, young people off, and I think it turns women off. Just the viciousness of the fighting. And I know a couple of women. My fiance is one of them. She looks at some of these things that are posted about me, and she says, are you nuts?
Yeah.
Like, how do you put up with this? I would never do this.
Yeah.
And I think most reasonable, rational people, and young people are reasonable and rational usually, and women are usually, they look at that and they go, ah. Yeah, like, forget it. So I think the problem lies with ufology and ufologists. And I don't think it lies with the people on the other end, meaning the young people.
Yeah.
And again, I think you should look at why there aren't more women in ufology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another very interesting question that I admit I haven't really looked into in any sort of in-depth way. But I suspect the reasons are the same as the reasons I think exist for young people. And that's a shame. You know, it's a real shame because guys like Stan and Dick Hall aren't getting any younger.
Yeah.
And eventually, if you don't have people coming up, you know, like a significant number of people coming up to replace them, then the whole thing will just sort of die away. And if you don't believe that it can, take my word for it, it can and it will. Other things have as well. You might still have a little niche somewhere, but people will move on to other things. Big band music is a perfect example. Yeah, big band music was big. That's why they called it big band. Not really, but, you know, it was big band. And you might hear it now. Yeah, it's sort of shown a bit of revival with some of the guys like Matt Dusk and Michael Bublé and those guys. But it's still a fringe area of the general music industry because rock and roll came along. And big band music seems stuffy to people. It seemed formulaic. It was tough to get into, however you want to phrase it. Rock and roll, hey, anybody can play rock and roll. It's edgy. It's new.
Yeah.
Revolutionary. Well, ufology is big band music. And if it's not careful, there's a very good chance that rock and roll is going to come along. And all of a sudden, nobody's going to give a rat's behind about UFOs anymore. Or very, very few people. I mean, if you think it's a fringe now, it'll really be a fringe then.
Yeah.
I think it's already moving in that direction. I think, really, it's moving in that direction. Now, some of the things that replace it will be paranormal. I'm not saying people will move away from the paranormal, but it will not be UFOs. And I've written columns about this. You want to know what rock and roll is? It's Wicca. And that kind of stuff, which I consider paranormal.
Yeah.
You go into a bookstore. I did this.
I wrote a little column about it.
7 or 8 shelves of Wicca, tarot, mm-hmm. you know, all that sort of stuff. And there's the 10 years ago, there were UFO books there, a lot of them. Now, it's one teeny little half of the shelf here in Halifax, at least, in the bookstores. And most of the books are by Zechariah Sitchin, which I don't really consider ufology anyway. Mm-hmm. The last time I looked, there was one book by Jerry Clark, Strange Skies, Stan Friedman's new release of Do You Believe in Magic?
Top Secret Magic.
I think there were one or two other books there, Don Ledger's book on the Shag Harbor incident. That's it.
Yeah.
Go into a university library. I did this in Halifax. There's four universities in Halifax, but the NovaNet system extends throughout Nova Scotia, like more universities per capita here than anywhere else in Canada. And you can type in UFO, flying saucer, any of that stuff. There's a blog column on this, almost nothing. Type in witchcraft, more books on witchcraft in the university library.
Yeah.
And then type in things like astronomy and serious scientific things, and obviously thousands, hundreds and thousands of books of those things. That's rock and roll, Wicca, tarot, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Ufology, big band. And you need to really change that. You need to find a way to make ufology, the study of UFOs, and again, I will differentiate the two, for lack of a better word, sexy.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, one way to do that is to get young people involved and stick them at the forefront. Meaning if you have to put a public face on it, make that public face Nick Redfern. Not that I'm saying Nick is sexy, although Nick's, you know, come hither kind of guy, take my word for it. But the less said about what he and I did in Puerto Rico together, the better. But, you know, put Nick Redfern out there, articulate, good-looking, young, relatively young. Put Mac Tonies out there. Mac Tonies has never been on Coast to Coast. That is outrageous. You get Richard Hoagland on Coast to Coast once a month, seemingly, talking about Mars or whatever.
Tony's
has written a good book, some of which I agree with, most of which I don't, but that doesn't matter. He's articulate. He's bright. He has interesting ideas. And he's 30 years old. He should be the guy that's appearing on Coast to Coast, although radio, but he talks young, too. But Tony should be in documentaries, and I'm putting him in Best Evidence. You know, I made a point of interviewing Mac. There are others. You're one. Greg Bishop is another. Like, there's young people out there. Those are the guys that should be in UFO films. And guys like Stan, I mean, no disrespect to him at all. Absolutely none. Love him. Tons of great work. But at some point, you become a professor emeritus or a ufologist emeritus or whatever you want to call it. Happens in the real world all the time. Happens in law firms. You reach a retirement age, you step back. Your name's still on the door. You still come into the office and consult every now and then, but you're not the guy going into court.
Yeah.
You leave that to the younger lawyers. And I think ufology needs to do that. Some of these older folks need to sort of step back into a more advisory consulting role where they welcome the new blood. And they let the new people, they don't just let them, they encourage them to come forward. And to bring new ideas and to ask questions and to challenge what they've done, meaning the older guys, challenge us. Maybe we got it wrong.
Yeah.
You know? Because 60 years on from 1947, we, meaning the vast majority of people, unless you're a true believer, still don't know what UFOs are.
Mm-hmm.
Can't explain it. So, obviously, they've done good work. Let's build on the work they've done, but let's take a long-term view and let's involve the next generation, like Star Trek did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'll still find people who go, the only real Star Trek is Jim Kirk's Star Trek. Even the Next Generation was, you know, it's anathema to them. It was an apostasy or whatever.
Yeah.
There I go trying to use big words. So it's horrible. And it's not true. It was just, it built on the original Star Trek, but then, you know, in some ways the Next Generation was better.
Mm-hmm.
And in other ways maybe it wasn't. But you need to sort of step aside at some point, and encourage people to come in. They don't do that. And that's the long-winded answer to your question. I think most of the blame lies with the people that exist that have the positions of so-called authority within ufology. Not all of them. There are exceptions, but a lot of them.
Yeah.
And that's truly unfortunate.
why don't you talk a little bit about Field of Fears, because when we were talking, set up the interview, you were doing some, sound like final work on it. So tell me about Field of Fears, what it's about, and when it'll be available for people to see.
First thing I'll do, Tim, is correct you in the most polite manner I can by saying it's Fields of Fear, not Fields of Fears. The funny thing is, the film is a biography, basically a biography of Fern Belzile, Canada's leading cattle mutilation investigator. And Fern refers in the film to the film as Field of Fears. So he does the same thing you do in the film. And I just didn't, you know, we were conducting an interview and I wasn't going to correct him. But the film is called Fields of Fear, but he refers to it as Field of Fears. So in the film, go figure. So there'll be much confusion about it. It's not a film about cattle mutilations.
Okay.
In the same way that Stan T. Friedman is not a film about UFOs.
Awesome.
However, cattle mutilations will obviously make an appearance because that's what Fern does, in the same way that UFOs make an appearance in Stan's film. It's a biography of Fern, who is a fascinating guy. He's in his late 70s now. He's walked the walk as well as talked the talk. He spent 50 years as an award-winning cattle rancher. Now, whatever I might think about cattle mutilations or not, I find far more credible a guy like Fern Belzile, who raised cattle, knows cattle, respected in his community, and believe me, I've been to his community, I've talked to people, he's very well respected.
Yeah.
That's a guy I'll listen to, as opposed to someone like Linda Moulton Howe, who does not have that background. No matter how much research she's done into it, she's not a rancher. So, I find Fern a more credible, say, investigator of the cattle mutilation phenomenon than the one that most people latch onto, Linda Moulton Howe, who's been doing it for 20 years now. Not to say maybe that she hasn't done good work, but I prefer Fern. So the film's about Fern, his life, and also his work, how he got into cattle mutilations, what he thinks of cattle mutilations, and then, of course, cattle mutilations themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So also appearing in the film as the resident skeptic, and here's a great irony for people, is Kevin Randall. Randall believes, obviously, he's convinced, UFOs have come to Earth, they're extraterrestrials, because he's one of the leading Roswell proponents.
Mm-hmm.
So he accepts all of that, but he doesn't think that aliens have been mutilating cattle. So that's an interesting skeptic for me.
Yeah.
If you put somebody from PsyCop on, he would have been easy to dismiss by the believers. They would have said, PsyCop, they hate everybody.
Yeah.
But here's a guy, he's a UFO ET guy. But he doesn't buy the alien explanation for cattle mutilation. Well, that's interesting. Carl Flock performed the same role up against Stan in Majestic 12.
Yeah.
In that Carl accepts that UFOs visited Earth. He accepted that they were probably alien spacecraft. He just didn't buy into the cosmic Watergate. So that's where it gets truly interesting in terms of the debate.
Nice.
Who else is in it? Greg Bishop is in it talking about cattle mutilations. Trying to think of ufological people that are also in it. Oh, Nick Redfern, of course. Yeah, Nick's in it. So it's Nick, Kevin, Fern, and Greg Bishop, as well as a number of people from Fern's hometown of St. Paul, Alberta, including the mayor.
Awesome.
So we have the mayor of St. Paul, Alberta, talking about cattle mutilations in Fern Belzile. So, yeah, it's I think it's I actually like it. Sometimes you finish a film and you go, you know, I'll wait and see how it does.
Yeah.
This is one this one I actually like. I think it's a fun film. It takes Fern and cattle mutilation seriously, but, you know, maybe not as seriously as some people would like, in the sense that it doesn't go out there and say, this is all real and it's some horrible government experiment or aliens or whatever. It leaves the door open at the end of the day. You make up your own mind what you think cattle mutilations might be between the two explanations, aliens, which is pretty much what Fern thinks it is, and on the other hand, predators and scavengers, which is what Kevin says it is.
Yes.
And Fern, one thing about Fern is the very interesting thing, and at the end, Greg Bishop really touches on this. Fern will not come out and say he thinks it's aliens. Now, you can glean that from what Fern says about everything else, because he rules everything else out.
Mm-hmm.
Ergo, if it's not this, and this, then it's got to be aliens, doesn't it? And he will also say, I think aliens, you know, maybe, probably, possibly, but he will never say specifically, I believe it's aliens.
Yeah.
That's good. He's just keeping an open mind, but as Greg points out, it's also very, very smart. because as soon as you open your mouth and say cattle are being mutilated by aliens, Greg said, you will lose a large part of your audience who will just dismiss you as a crazy UFO guy.
Yeah.
Fern, on the other hand, doesn't say that. He just presents the evidence in his lectures. I've seen it. Here are the photos. Here are the alternative theories that I don't agree with, and here's why. Here's the alien theory, which I think might actually hold water for the following reasons. And then you can agree or disagree with them, but it's a very well-constructed, canny presentation.
Yeah.
And you might not expect that from a guy that I think has a grade 9 education and spent most of his time as a cattle farmer.
Yeah.
But he's very media savvy. He's very articulate when he's talking about cattle mutilation. And as Greg said, I think that's the proper way to go about it, to not be, this is what it is, but say, here's the evidence, decide for yourself. By the way, I think it's probably this based on the evidence, but you make up your own mind.
Yeah.
And that's really what I think in many respects separates Fern, again, from Linda Moulton Howe. Linda Moulton Howe will go on the radio and tell you what it is. Fern will go on the radio and tell you what he thinks it might be, and here's the evidence, and now make up your own mind.
Yeah.
He's not going to tell you what to think.
Yeah.
And I have a great deal of respect for Fern, and he's a super guy, and I really do like the film. I'm sort of, it'll be airing on Space here in Canada in late September. They haven't given me an exact date yet, but I have to deliver it by the end of this month, and the premiere air date is late September, and then it'll air 18 times over 4 years after that. And in the U.S., hopefully we'll be able to sell it down into the United States at some point or another, and around the world, too, I would hope.
I see. So it airs on Space in Canada, and then what, do you try to sell it to somebody in America, or you're not going to make it available, through a website or something?
For free? Good heavens.
No, 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 not like that. I mean, you can order the DVD through whatever.
Well, yeah,
site.
Hopefully we'll get a DVD. I know Tim Crawford at UFO TV. Mm-hmm. Tim's a friend of mine. We've talked about it. I think he's looking for a good film on cattle mutilations, and this is, sort of about cattle mutes. I think if it's a good film, there'll be lots of bonus material I'll be able to add. Hopefully there'll be a DVD that comes out sometime, early 2007 would be my guess. And if he doesn't, if I don't work with him on it, I'll probably do it myself. So.
All right. And what about the other film you're working on, and that is Best Evidence, Top 10 UFO Cases. We talked about that pretty in-depth already. Well, when do you expect that to be, available for people to watch?
Yeah, that's funny.
What do you mean?
The original delivery date for that was May of 2006. I've had extension after extension. I'm still working on it. It is a film, of all the films I've done on UFOs, and I really worked hard on Stan and Fields of Fear. Fields of Fear took a year now to finish. I first left to shoot a year ago.
Wow.
But Best Evidence is one that I am really working hard to cross the T's, dot the I's, mm-hmm. and make it a film that will stand out from the others. I think the others have all been good films, but they've been somewhat limited to some degree by their budgets.
Yeah.
Best Evidence has a bit of a larger budget. It has a major distribution company in the United Kingdom that will be selling it around the world into markets.
Mm-hmm.
It's already pre-sold into New Zealand. Television, TV New Zealand will be airing it.
Awesome.
In Canada, it's pre-sold to Space. That's how we do it. We pre-sell it in Canada and then raise the rest of the money through government. So it is, for me personally, just in terms of my career, it is the film that could take me out of, say, the lower class of filmmaking, which is relatively low-budget documentaries, $100,000 to $130,000 films, and move me further up the food chain where I can make more expensive films, frankly, so I can make more money, to be blunt, but also so I can make films that have maybe more, not quality, but just bells and whistles, if you will.
Yeah.
Because if you use the bells and whistles right, then that's a good thing.
Exactly.
So Best Evidence, we've got an animation company called Wing It here in Halifax that will be doing animated recreations of some of the cases, for instance. Wing It, you will have seen their work in films such as Superman Begins, Sin City, Day After Tomorrow. The guys that work for Wing It have all been involved in elements of the animation that you will see in those films, which is not to say they did all of Superman Begins, but they've worked on them.
Yeah.
I've seen their work. If you look at their trailer, ooh, that scene from Sin City with Bruce Willis, that was, Wing It. So, really good guys who have agreed to sort of work for a lot less money than they usually would, because A, they like the project, and B, they think, as I do, as everyone who's working on this project thinks, because we're all taking less money than we usually would, or at least they are. I'm taking the same amount I usually do, which is close to nothing. You know, they all sort of say, if Paul hits it with this one, then Paul will have an opportunity to make more expensive films, which we can all profit on later.
Yeah.
So all of these people are working for less money than they normally would for me to try and make the best possible film that we can. And I want it to be... You know, I spent a year and a half telling people to take UFOs seriously. I want it to be sort of a film type of version of Dick Hall's Best Evidence, Volume 2 kind of thing, where you can give this film to your friends and say, look, as I said earlier in the interview, none of these little four-minute snippets are going to give you the whole story by any means, but look into these cases. These are 10 cases you should look at, and if only one of them raises your eyebrow, then you should take the UFO phenomenon seriously. And if you're a scientist, take it seriously. If you're a politician, take it seriously. Give some money to the, you know, whatever your national scientific foundation is, to study UFOs. And I toy with the idea, and I may or may not do it, I don't know. Depends, frankly, on the money, because it's not cheap to do.
Yeah.
But I've often suggested that one way to get people interested would be to send copies of the UFO evidence, Dick's book, or a chapter thereof,
yeah,
to politicians and scientists and so on and so forth. If I can pull the money together, one of my dreams with Best Evidence is to be able to put DVDs together, and there is some really, there's stuff that's going to be on this film that people haven't seen before, even about cases that they know of.
Yeah.
I've managed to dredge out some new stuff.
Awesome.
And I will, you know, I really hope to be able to send that, if to nobody else, at least all the cabinet ministers in Canada, particularly science and technology. And maybe a few select scientists, and say, look, watch the film, and if you still think you can ignore the UFO phenomenon, then do it. Go ahead. But hopefully at least one or two of you will say, wait a second, now senior, you know, American Air Force officers and scientists and police officers and radar sightings, you know, like hard evidence,
yeah,
and all of it coming together at once in these cases, in and out. Wow, maybe I didn't know about this. Maybe I should take a look at it. And so scientists will listen if you present it in the right way. Politicians will listen if you present it in the right way. If you give them the evidence, not F through Z, but the A, B, C, D, and E that you can prove.
Yeah.
And tell them there's something worth looking at here. They'll listen, and with them listening, I honestly believe will come resources to look into it. And that's really what ufology needs. And almost anybody in ufology will tell you that. To conduct a proper investigation, you need money, if for no other reason than to travel. Why aren't witnesses being interviewed as much now as they were 30 years ago? Simple reason, less money now.
Yeah.
Those organizations used to have resources. They don't as much anymore. So it's all a cyclical thing, Tim. As interest in ufology wanes, as it becomes more of a big band thing as opposed to rock and roll, then there's less money.
Yeah.
And when there's less money, that means less serious research. With less serious research will come a further diminishment of interest in UFOs. And it goes round and round and round, and it's like a whirlpool, and it'll suck you down.
Yeah.
And I think that's where ufology might be heading. I think it might take the serious study of the UFO phenomenon with it. I kind of hope that it's not too late to get the ship out of that whirlpool and back in the ocean heading on the proper course, you know, as I see it. There are other people who see it differently, but I think they're part of the problem, not part of the solution.
And when can we expect to get our hands on Best Evidence?
Oh, right. That was your original question. Sorry. I'm evil. Remember, Tim, I'm evil. I hope to have it done by the end of 2006.
Okay.
I hope to actually have it done by November. Because most of the shooting's done. I have one or two interviews I have to pick up for a couple of cases. But the animation, you know, doesn't come quickly. It does take a fair bit of time. And it also takes time to edit it and put it together. And it really is sort of like my baby, this one. Because it has the potential to do things that I've been advocating in other places. And for me to kind of put my money where my mouth is and say, look, I'll create something that can maybe make a difference. And, you know, that sounds maybe, I don't mean to sound like I'm fooling myself. I am not going to change the world. But I do want to, you know, maybe I can make an incremental change. And that's why when the few people who did say they didn't want to become involved, I just really did say, you know, well, you don't get it, guys, do you? So screw you. But to all those other people, like Dick Hall, here's, you know, in the film, here's the teaser, interviewed in the film, Kevin Randall, Dick Hall, Stan Friedman, Brad Sparks, Bruce McAdee, let's see, who else did I talk, Mac Tonies, got the young guys in there too. I mean, like, Don Ledger will be interviewed for the film, which might give you an indication of which case might be on the top 10 list, if you know Don's work. So a lot of the best UFO researchers that you're going to find, the big names, they'll all be there, including Dick Hall, who doesn't do interviews really anymore. Unlike the Peter Jennings special, I'm not going to leave these guys on the cutting room floor.
Awesome.
They'll be in there. You'll be seeing Dick. You'll be seeing Brad, who had never been in film before, as far as I know, but is one of the top researchers out there. Kevin, I might even try and get Carl Flock in there. He's dead, obviously, and a great loss to the serious study of the UFO phenomenon. But I do have material, previous material from other films that Carl was interviewed on, and he commented on certain cases that I might be able to get Carl in there too.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, there's going to be, I mean, it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of people in there, and whatever people might think of me, you know, divorce the person from the film.
Yeah.
And even if you don't like me, you're probably going to want to watch the film. And if you can do it on free TV, I'm not trying to sell you the DVD here. Hopefully we will have it in the American market, and you'll be able to see it on Sci-Fi or Discovery for free if
awesome.
You get cable. And you know, judge for yourself.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Anything else up on the horizon that we should know about that you want to talk about?
No. I believe me, I think if your listeners are still listening to him, I'd probably bore them to death or enrage them. Which is a tremendous combination to be able to bore somebody as you're enraging them. So,
well, you know.
So I've hit everything that I could possibly talk about.
Awesome. Well, let me throw in the websites here for all the listeners here who want to check out your writing. Like I said, the blog is amazing. It's got tons of stuff on there. And like you said, it may infuriate you, but hopefully it'll get you to think. The blog address is redstarfilms.blogspot.com. And the conference is 2006 New Frontiers Symposium, October 14th, 2006, Halifax, Nova Scotia. And one more time, what's the URL for that?
Halifax UFO, HalifaxUFO.com.
Awesome. Paul Kimmel, thank you very much for being on the show. I know I took a ton of your time, and we just talked about tons of stuff, but I had a great time talking to you, and you make a lot of very important points about the field of ufology that need to be considered. And I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me for so long.
Thanks, Tim. It's been a pleasure, and keep up the good work at Banal of America.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio. Big, big thanks to Paul Kimball for sitting down and talking to us for so long. He gave us just a ton of time. He's a very busy man, but he took the time to give us the kind of in-depth answers that he knows our listeners are looking for when they check out Banal of America Audio. You can find out more information on Paul Kimball at www.redstarfilms.blogspot.com. That's his blog. He posts there constantly. You can find out more information on him and his thoughts on various aspects of the esoteric there. Also, big thanks to Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Ralph Molesworth, and Joe V. of BenallofAmerica.com for your help and support with the audio series. Much of what you hear week in and week out on Banal of America Audio would not be possible without the help and support of these fine folks. The staff of BanalofAmerica.com is second to none. I highly recommend you check out BanalofAmerica.com to read their columns covering a wide range of esoteric topics. BanalofAmerica.com, make it a part of your daily search for esoteric answers and opinion. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. If you're a long-time listener to Banal of America Audio and you want to help support the audio series, I can't encourage it enough. Click the PayPal button at banalofamerica.com, make a donation. Every little bit helps. We would definitely appreciate it, and it would certainly help keep the show running smoothly as it has so far this season. Next week on Banal of America Audio, it's Dennis Spaulding, co-author of My Search for the Afterlife, A Trail of Clues. It's a decidedly different Banal of America Audio. It's a slightly new sort of topic that we're covering, the afterlife, the search for the afterlife that Dennis Spaulding has undergone. It's an amazing story. We're going to cover it top to bottom and in depth next week on Banal of America Audio, October 21st, 2006. And sometime in the next week or two, we'll also be announcing the slate of guests we have lined up for November. And it's going to knock your socks off when you see who we have on tap for you. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Dennis Spaulding, co-author of My Search for the Afterlife, next week on Banal of America Audio. You're going to get a little audio preview here coming up at the end of this closeout, so definitely stay tuned for that, and you'll hear a little bit about what Dennis Spaulding's going to be talking about. Until you hear from me then, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. This is Tim Banal, signing off.
Next week on Banal of America Audio.
I kept thinking I'm getting closer and closer and closer to contacting my son. I'm going, wow, that is strange. And I started thinking, I wonder. That was the initial start of my number theory. And like I tell everybody I talk with, this theory is for me.
Yeah.
It's something I came up with that means something to me, that my son is trying to communicate, you know, through that light. Like my worst critic, married to my daughter, one thing that I treasure, he didn't believe everything I said. But as my book started going on, more writing, more of this, I always shared my information when things happened. And he looked at me one day, he says, you know, I don't necessarily believe it. He says, I'm not saying those are lies or nothing, but you have something going on in your life I can't explain. Boil it all down, no matter what religion you're talking about, or my belief in the spiritual issue, the number theories, it's a belief. It's a six-letter word, belief. It floats your boat, it gets you through the killings, the wars, of everything going on. But it's a belief, and you will not know until the day you die what's right. Hello, this is Dennis Spaulding. I'm the co-author of the book, My Search for the Afterlife, Trail of Booze, spiritual story about the loss of my son in 1993. You can hear the entire story on Banal of America Audio.